Game on 2FM. With Green Firm, a nourishing addition to any sandwich, salad, stir fry, or snack. Natural protein your way.
Thanks to the superstar Jenny Green dragging us all over the hump of the week. Jenny's back tomorrow at 3. It's Wednesday, the 3rd of February.
Coming up on Game On tonight, we ask Lisa Fallon, will Man City finally grab control of the English Premier League?
It's finished at Sunderland. Manchester United have done all they can. That Rooney goal was enough for the 3 points. Manchester City are still alive here. Balotelli, Aguero!
Duncan Williams, Colin McAtee and Brendan Fanning discuss the challenges facing Irish club rugby as COVID continues.
Bobby McHenry, they've turned the ball over now. Duncan Williams kicks it clear and German's after this. Nobody at home for Contar. If this one sits up, he could be in again. German is going to back his pace. The chase is on, the pass has to go. It does to Duncan Williams. Super sub in the corner.
Are you having it?
Okay. And Cork Conn, your league champions for 2019.
The commentary, the crowds would really give you a lift.
Can we play that clip again?
Yeah. We'll play it when Duncan comes on a little while. And after lining up football and soccer pitches in 2020, we ask Saoirse Noonan what her plans are for the year ahead.
The last 9 days have been fairly full on. I only had one day off and 4 games, 4 sessions, so it's been fairly tough on the body, but 3 wins out of 4, I can't complain. Another good win again today with the girls, so delighted.
Tough on the body is right, but she's a superstar. You can text us on 51552 or tweet at GameOn2FM.
GameOn2FM.
So after hearing the commentary and the crowd noise, I think we should start on a very positive note today, Donegal. The Women's Six Nations Championship has been officially rescheduled. It is going to begin on the first weekend in April, and there's going to be a new format, 2 pools of 3, with Ireland playing away to Wales and at home to France before a final game against the team which finishes in the same position in the other pool. You've played in the Six Nations. What would you feel about a new format, or how do you feel about a new format?
I'm okay about this format because it makes complete sense. Some of the formats that we've seen that you'd honestly want to do applied maths to try to work out. So this is quite simple. We will play a home game and an away game. So we are at home to, we're away to Wales on the 10th of April, and then we're
home to France then after
yes,
that.
Yes, and home to France on the 17th or 18th. And then we will play whoever finishes on the other side in the same level between Italy, France and England.
Can we move on then?
How did I make this sound so complicated?
Well, your first problem was that you started off by saying it was easy. And then it all went downhill after that. Yeah, you set the expectation too high. Go on.
Try to save me here. There's a home match, there's an away game, and then you play against someone in the other pool. So, like, that is quite simple, isn't it?
We'll be tuning in the first weekend of April, and we should hopefully have it figured out by then.
I am delighted, though. We did need to get our game back. It is brilliant for our girls to go out. The only thing, Marie, and I don't want to be negative, just going straight into big games, that's going to be a massive bridge. I know you can play as many training games as you want, but trying to get up to speed at international level is going to be very difficult, and it's going to be tough to do. But I am delighted that we're going to get our Six Nations, and I think this type of a format as well, it could suit us if we could put in a big performance away to Wales and then have France at home and do something special. And it's great to have it back.
Okay, well, we will be chatting plenty of rugby a little bit later on, but first of all, we are going to cross over to Peter Smith because there is an early goal in the Man City Burnley game. Peter.
And City lead here by 1-0. They kept possession right from the very off, and less than 3 minutes were on the clock when Raheem Sterling found room on the left of the area, slipped in Bernardo Silva, whose angled shot was pushed out by Nick Pope to the edge of the 6-yard area, and there was Gabriel Jesus, who launched himself into a simple diving header to put his team ahead. Moments ago, it was almost 2-0 for City as Gundogan played a crossfield ball. Jesus again on the right of the area, tried a near post shot, but this time Nick Pope had his angles right and made a save to push the ball away. In the last 7 meetings between these two sides, City won all 7. There's been an aggregate score of 28-1, which now, if you add this goal from Gabriel Jesus, makes it 29-1. But on the night, City lead here by 1-0.
Just before we let you go, Peter, what was the reaction around Manchester last night to Manchester United's 9 goals?
Well, they were thrilled to equal that 26-year record in the Premier League that was set by a United side inspired by Andy Cole against Ipswich back in 1995. And a realisation that the title bid had been reignited again, and a really significant cut in the goal difference. Although City now stands at plus six above United, you know, it really was a big thing to eat away at if it does come down to goal difference at the end of the campaign. But you do sense here in this game that City might just be able to boost their goal difference a little bit between now and the end of the 90 minutes. But certainly from a footballing point of view, a North West point of view, if Liverpool beat Brighton tonight, they're going to be back in it again. Liverpool play City on Sunday. It's all very interesting and all incredibly exciting.
It really is. Thanks so much. We will check in with you in a little while, Peter. There is another game that kicked off at 6 o'clock. It is Fulham and Leicester, and it is nil all in that game. Now we are joined on the line by Lisa Fallon. Lisa, is Peter Smith right? Are Manchester United back on track for a title bid, do you think?
Yeah, I think so. I think, you know, thereabouts, it was is such an emphatic game. I think, you know, the early sending off for Southampton, who were massively depleted as it was going into the game. And, you know, you get the early goal and they were just so ruthless. And do you know what? I think it's something that we haven't really seen from Manchester United, is that really, really ruthless streak where you get ahead, you get a good lead in a game, but to just go away and put a team away. And Liverpool have done that to teams. Manchester City have done it to teams, and you know, I just felt it was something we never really saw from Manchester United. And that's, you know, there was such a ruthlessness about them last night. There was no taking the foot off the pedal. Even at 5-0, 6-0, they kept going and going after the goals, and I think that shows a little bit of a mindset shift with them as well. So yeah, listen, I think it's impossible to call it at the moment, the way things are going. So many teams are going through little rough patches and stuff, but you know, Man City will probably do a little bit of damage again tonight by the looks of it. And but certainly that win, you know, it just keeps Manchester United alive and there or thereabouts.
And just in terms of their players and kind of refinding that form that maybe they mightn't have had that sharpness in the last few games, the likes of Fernandes and Martial, just in terms of timing, it is really important for them to be back on track right now, Lisa.
Yeah, totally. I mean, and like, you know, confidence is such a big thing for goal scorers. And you look at the little patch that Firmino and Salah have gone through with Liverpool, and it's just about putting the ball into the back of the net. It doesn't really matter how it goes in. Once it goes in, and you know, strikers are such confidence animals, and it, you know, you feed off that, and it really is a big thing for them. So yeah, absolutely. Look, you know, to have so many different scorers for United last night is important. And you know, like you say, it just gives them that little bit of momentum, and it's a platform now for them to kick on again.
Lisa, confidence is a massive thing, but it was against nine men, and obviously the early challenge, you know, a young player, just what do you say as a manager to someone like that, 19 years of age, you want them to go out and, you know, have a big game, but just obviously didn't go their way.
I know it's a problem, and it, you know, you have to take a risk and put young players in, and sometimes it doesn't work out for you, you know, and you have to try and give them confidence and build them up to go into the game. And you know, he just obviously showed a little bit of naivety going into that challenge, and you know, it wasn't a nice challenge when you watched it back, you know, and you could see the stud marks on his leg. And but like, look, it's a tough learning environment for him, and you know, he'll learn a lot from it. But it was massively damaging to Southampton, who, you know, to lose a player that early in the game, you have to reshuffle the pack, and you know, it just made a really, really difficult task almost impossible. And you know, for Hasenhüttl, it's difficult for him because he knows straight away, like, they were under the cosh going into the game, but you're under the, like, and like, how do you do your team talk at 4-0 down at half time? You know, it's just so difficult. But you know, it's a young player, and you know, you have to build up their confidence too, but at the same time, it's a tough one for him, and you know, they'll have to work on him to get his confidence back to go in again.
He wasn't the only one last night though that was kind of doing daft things. Leno from Arsenal as well, Lisa. And Louise, you kind of nearly expected at this stage for him, but it was kind of a night of red cards, really.
It was. They were flying. But I mean, you know, the Leno one. Look, it's one of those ones. You're not really sure what he's doing when he comes, and it's, you know, it's just you're almost shouting at him. You know, watching the telly. You know, what are you doing? But look, this is. They're those little moments, and it's something that we've seen from him before. But I mean, the other ones were, you know, the whole VAR situation and the whole, the way those challenges were, like, I felt uncomfortable about the other two, you know, just the way the challenges were, like, it accidental and, you know, were they really intended, and the minimal amount of contact, and, you know, it's just... It, you know, you want VAR to enhance the game, but for so many decisions lately, it's just causing confusion. And even watching last night, the commentator just, he couldn't call whether they'd be red cards or not. He was afraid to call them because you don't know whether they'll be. And I think when so many people are uncertain about the interpretation of the rules, it's not a good place, you know. Even for a defender, you're not really 100% sure what you can and can't do, and it makes it like it just makes it really difficult, I think, you know.
And Lisa, just from a coach's point of view, like, how are they adapting? Like, I know you're obviously not in England anymore, but like, how are coaches adapting to all this uncertainty and just confusion, really? Like, is it something that they're working on in the training pitch, or they're just waiting and seeing what happens when they go and play a game and trying to deal with it on the spot?
Look, I mean, I think, you know, there's uncertainty around the rules, and, you know, I think could anybody put their hand up and say they 100% know what the rules are and how they're being interpreted? I don't think they can, and I think that's difficult. And, you know, it is still subjective. Like, you've one referee on the pitch who makes a call, and then VAR is just a different referee giving a different opinion potentially. So it is still very subjective, and you know, it is, apart from the lines that they're drawn with the offside rule, it's not an exact science. And you know, the interpretation is the biggest issue, really. And you know, as long as it's still people, you know, making those decisions, it's difficult to call. I think you just have to try and not have your players to overthink it, and just to understand it as it is, and to try and just deal with situations as they happen. But you know, and you have to put your hands behind your back and trying to make sure that you don't make the hand or the arm contact below the sleeve and stuff. But it's just, it is difficult, but you can't over focus on it either, because you know, they still have to play the game and be able to commit to challenges and read the game and read the situations and make the decisions in those moments. But you know, the way it is at the moment, it's just one of those seasons, isn't it? It's there's so many rule changes, and it's just hard to know exactly what it is at the moment.
Lisa, is that the thing, that they need to change the rules now to adapt to VAR? Maybe the rules that were there before it aren't, you know, able to work with the systems they have now. And we're seeing so many, especially you mentioned that the offside, armpits being offside nearly every second night.
Honestly, and even black armbands being offside, you know, it's crazy. Look, I think the problem with VAR, I think, is that football is not an exact science. It's a contact sport. Every interaction with football has so many variables, you know, players, movement, you know, the ground, the opposition players. It's not an exact science, and it's always going to be subjective, and that's where it makes it difficult. You know, I think if they're going to go the route of trying to define things, I mean, we've all watched situations, Donica, where you're looking at it and you're going, I'm not sure, but three people in the room could have a different opinion about what it is, you know. And you just have to go on social media and you see so many different opinions. It is subjective, but I think what you want is, you want common sense to prevail, and common sense has to apply, and you need that element of just, you know, maybe favouring the attacker if it's millimetres. You have to reward attacking play and positive play. And, you know, it's, I think when it comes down to millimetres, I think it has to be common sense that prevails, as opposed to trying to be overly scientific about something that you can't be scientific about.
It's boring as well, Lisa. There's nothing worse though when a match is over and you're looking forward to analysis and then they start with VAR and they spend such a long time going over and back and trying to make sense of it, and ultimately nobody ever seems to make sense of it and everybody's frustrated by the end of it. Hopefully there won't be any VAR in Liverpool-Brighton tonight, but will there be any of the new players, do you think, Lisa? They've obviously only just, they're only a couple of days in, Davies in Quebec, and with Matip being out in Liverpool without three of their centre-backs until the summer, they're still in a sticky situation and the games are coming all the time.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's relentless at the moment, and you know, I suppose the injury situation and obviously with it kind of being confirmed that Virgil van Dijk is going to miss the rest of the season, you know. So, and obviously the last minute recruitment as well that they made, it'll be interesting to see what he does, because, you know, for Davies and Kabak, I mean, how do you get them up to speed tactically in 24 hours, less than 24 hours?
How do you, Lisa?
Well, I mean, it's difficult, you know, it's very difficult. And, you know, if you're going to put players in, they need to know their roles within the system, and it does take time. But then sometimes needs must. And if it is a case that you have to put a player in, you just have to give them the basics. And then you have to rely potentially on the other players around them to talk them through it and communicate with them. So, you know, if you're putting somebody in new into the team, you know, in the centre back position, you rely massively on your goalkeeper, you rely massively on the centre midfielders that are in front of them, and it's just such an important piece, is the communication, that the manager can only do so much in terms of leading up to the game, but on the pitch then you really are relying on the players around that player to communicate with them and keep them up to speed or talk them through different things. And but again, it leaves you susceptible to mistakes that other players within the system may not make, but that's the nature of the beast, and obviously that's reflective of what Liverpool's situation is at the moment. So I think it'll be really interesting to see, does he put them in tonight, and you know what kind of a team Liverpool put out.
Is it an interesting one to try it in though, Lisa? Brighton, I know they're 17th, but did Man United not learn their lesson from trying that as well? There's banana skins everywhere in the league.
That's the thing about this league, you know, that you can't take any team advantage of any team or think that you can go into a game and not be on the ball and not be 100% at it, because, you know, the teams down the bottom are scrapping for every point that they can get. I mean, it's so vital for them that, you know, they're looking at setting up and negating teams and stopping you from playing and hitting you on the counter attack or getting you from a set piece. And, you know, it's really difficult when you play against teams that are down the bottom, because if they get a goal, they're just going to sit in and make it really hard and kill the space, and it can be really difficult to break teams down, you know. But look, I mean, there's no easy games in the Premier League until there's an easy game as such, but you can never go into a game expecting one, because, you know, as you said, like, you know, Manchester United have learned that the hard way recently, and, you know, it's and Liverpool as well have come through a patch of, you know, they're only just starting to find their form, but you'd like to think with the form now that they seem to have got again, that he maybe could take one or two risks and go all out attack, and with the likes of Salah and Firmino and the attacking players, you know, seeming to be on form again, that it could be, you know, it could be a risk, but you have to take risks, calculated risks. And Jurgen, I think, to be fair to Jurgen Klopp, he's the type of man that does take risks and attacking risks. He puts some of his eggs more in the attacking basket than he does in the defensive one, and he trusts his forward players and backs them to get the goals that they need.
Okay, Lisa, stay with us for just a minute. Leicester have taken the lead against Fulham, but now we're going to cross over to Peter Smith to see if there's been any developments in the Man City-Burnley game. Peter.
It's still City leading by 1-0 as we approach the midway point in the first half, and City continue to pass the ball around with tremendous precision and fluency. There's always a man and available, always an option. That said, though, they haven't really created that much since going ahead to that third-minute header from Gabriel Jesus. Jesus had an angled shot that was blocked by Pope. Cancelo tried a shot from outside the area for City that was blocked by the Burnley central defender Ben Mee guarding his six-yard line. And there was a moment where Nick Pope came out of his area and had to be really on guard, and his timing was just about spot on as he nicked the ball away from Raheem Sterling. Burnley forced a corner but couldn't really do anything with it. City packed their 18-yard area and defended it well, and Burnley have tried to play that long tactic up to J. Rodriguez. Their main striker Chris Wood is absent tonight through injury, but City still looking fairly comfortable. And as I say, when they've got the ball, it can be a while before Burnley get it back again. 23 minutes gone at Turf Moor. Burnley 0, Manchester City 1.
Thanks, Peter. And we'll check back in with Peter at half-time. Now, there are two other games on this evening. Leeds are playing Everton at 7:30. Aston Villa, West Ham at 8:15. And I already mentioned Liverpool and Brighton as well. Now, Lisa, I'm just going to bring you back in because I want to talk to you about the Chelsea women's boss, Emma Hayes, someone you obviously know very, very well. But she'd been linked with the Wimbledon job and has since confirmed that she is not going to be pursuing that role. She's very happy where she was, where she is, and went as far to say that it's almost an insult to women's football to suggest that it's a step up for her to be moving to a job at Wimbledon. What are your thoughts on the last couple of days and what's been played out here?
Yeah, I think it's really interesting. I think it's number one, it's great to see the conversation being had in the first place. I think it's probably the first time that there's been a real serious contender, female contender for, you know, a job in the English Football League, and it's a great conversation, and it's great that conversation piece is there. But I can totally understand from Emma's perspective that she wouldn't see that as a step up. I mean, you look at where she's working, the resources that she has, and the standard of the team and the ambitions of the team. You know, there's no secret, and Emma's certainly made no secret of the fact that, you know, she wants to win the Champions League with this Chelsea squad. And, you know, it's been a process of building over a number of years, and, you know, they won the league and the cup double last year, the Continental Cup, and it's firmly in the sights of them all, you know, and that would be right across the board at the club. So, you know, to say that, and I think, do you know what? I think there's a lot of people maybe underestimate how advanced the women's game actually is in England and in other countries as well. The top level of the women's game is 100% comparable to, you know, some very high levels of the men's game in terms of the preparation of the teams, all the work that goes on in the back room, the staff, the investment. I think a lot of people perhaps underestimate just how far advanced the women's game actually is behind the scenes. And that's why, you know, to go from the women's game into an environment where you don't have the resources and maybe, you know, the club isn't as advanced facilities and resource wise and that, you know, it wouldn't necessarily be seen as a step up in terms of that. But obviously, you know, the game itself, I think, you know, there's no one would deny that the stakes are higher in the men's game at the moment. People tend to lose their jobs quicker in the men's game than they have done in the women's traditionally. That is changing, though, this year by the looks of it. We've seen a few changes in the WSL early in the season before Christmas. There was a couple of changes in management, which is not something that has really happened before. But I think that shows that, you know, with the increased TV coverage, increased investment, you know, the stakes are getting higher. Clubs are putting more money into the women's game and becoming more ambitious and recognising the opportunities that there are in it. And it's now, there now are really viable careers for female players. So as the stakes increase and that, you know, the pressure will increase. But certainly, I think, you know, the main thing for me would be that, you know, would Emma see it as a step up to go to Wimbledon? She certainly wouldn't, and she'd be right to. I think, you know, from where she is right now, she's 100% right to stay where she is, and go after that Champions League and go and win it. And then you see it's a different conversation after that.
Yeah, I just think I agree with everything that you say, but just purely from a almost a selfish point of view, I just love to see a woman make that bit of progress, and to for someone to become the very first woman to manage a professional men's team in English football. And, you know, you just wonder, and I suppose a little bit sadly, really, you know, if it's not Emma, then who and when? And, you know, will it ever happen, Lisa?
Well, look, I mean, we've had examples of it across Europe. I mean, Corinne Diacre was manager the League Two side in France, Clermont Foot, for almost 3 years. She did a really good job. She got voted manager of the month on a number of occasions, and, you know, she took a team that were bottom of League Two and brought them right up into, you know, a good position in the table. And, you know, there was a little bit of furore at the start, and then very quickly that changed, and you know, she just became normalised, and that's what you hope. And even here, from my own experiences, you know, I feel very normalised in men's football here, and it's really not a problem once you're in and once you're doing the job. And I think it'll be the same. It's just that it hasn't happened in England yet. And when it does, it probably will be a story. But I think once the ground is broken, I think... and listen, I certainly know from personal experience over there that it's not far off. I know that for sure. It's
really
not far off.
Anything.
And I think we'll see it imminently. I think we'll see it.
It sounds like you might even
later.
Know something. Lisa Fallon, thanks as always for joining us. We're going to take a quick break and then we're back with our rugby panel.
Game on. On 2FM with Green Fern. Green Fern's new on-the-go chicken bites are natural, high in protein and packed with flavour.
Welcome back, Tonic. I'm going to put you on the spot now, I'm afraid. A little bit of breaking news. Josh Adams has been suspended for Wales' opening two games of the Six Nations after breaching COVID-19 protocols. He attended a gathering at a family member's home on Sunday. So he is gone for the opening two games, which means he's gone for the Ireland game.
Josh Adams, I played with him in Munster. I was his captain. He is a brilliant guy. Really, I couldn't speak highly enough. I'm so driven to do well, to push on. He was in a club, Marie, where we were struggling week in, week out, and he always put in massive performances. But if it, you know, I don't know the background to this news, but he will have known that you can't do stuff like this. You'd want to check in with him personally and just see how he is. I know he's massively close to his family, and even heading up to Worcester from Wales is a big deal for me. He's a guy we always had to kind of keep an eye out for. But from a selfish point of view, to you know, to break rules like that, I think we're seeing it's just not on. A bit of a boost for Ireland. I know that's really selfish to say, but he's a quality player and someone that could probably leave out that back three. But yeah, that's disappointing to hear. Okay, Marie, we spoke last week about the cancelling of the Energia All-Ireland League, and to discuss the clubs and their importance to Irish rugby, we're joined by Colin McEntee, Director of Rugby Development and a powerhouse of a back row for Lansdowne in his day. Collie, how are you?
How are you?
I'm very good. And all good discussions are increased by a spiky scrum half with over 150 caps from Munster and still bossing forwards, backs and even coaches around Cork. Duncan Williams, how are you doing?
Good, how are you keeping?
I'm good. And Sunday Independent rugby correspondent and Clontarf stalwart Brendan Fanning. Brendan, how's it going?
Very good, Duncan. How are you getting on?
And good, Brendan. I searched three search engines today to find a pair of you in a pair of rugby shorts, and I'm still struggling.
There's a few black and white shots floating around some
of the others. I do think there is a position propping up the bar after good days. Colin, this all got going last week, Collie, and I'll start with you. I suppose, you know, the news to everyone within rugby that the club game was going to be stood down for the year was disappointing, but not a bit of a shock to everyone involved. Just, you might give us your perspective on losing out in our club scene for this season.
Yeah, Donica, it's been very disappointing for everyone. I think COVID has hit every every form of society, and unfortunately, you know, we were part of that. And right from the offset, we tried to be as flexible and adaptable as possible with our Energia community series starting off before Christmas. And the hope for after Christmas was to run for this season one round of the All-Ireland League. But as we go into February now, we're looking at the numbers and then considering a lead-in time for contact sport of 3 to 4 weeks. It was very important that we were very honest and provided clarity to our clubs, especially those players who just really get motivated by the All-Ireland League. But in saying that the All-Ireland League is stood down, it doesn't mean that rugby is stood down. And we're on the go for whenever we get the green light to go. And we're looking at all options at the moment, Donica. So, you know, we got to be realistic. And there's no point in sending false messages out to our public.
Yeah, that's super to hear, Cully. To be honest with you, as a rugby man, you want to hear that we're able to get back up and running as quickly as possible. Duncan, you did the most admirable thing when you moved away from Munster and went straight back in the playing capacity with Cork on. Just how was the news received by the lads down there, your playing pool, the lads that you tug out with now every Tuesday and Thursday night and play? How were they about the news that club rugby was not finishing out this year?
Yeah, look, they were obviously very disappointed. Like, me coming back from the professional game to go training with them, it was phenomenal to see the amount of effort and time they put into it. You know, they take it so seriously, they train so hard, you know, they train just as hard as professional lads, and, you know, it's kind of their outlet then at the weekend to go play a match and enjoy themselves after, and it's, you know, it's just unfortunate for them that they don't get to do that this year. And, you know, for everyone, as Cully said, you know, even like the Alakadoos, you know, they love rugby, whatever, both the players love rugby, but the Alakadoos love going to rugby, watching rugby, talking about rugby after, having their few drinks in the bar. So, you know, it's a big community thing. It's just a shame for everyone, really, that it couldn't go ahead.
Yeah, Brendan, just on that point, like, for morale, from all ages, that's where the club kind of survives. What do you feel will be the biggest impact of losing out in the Energia league this year?
Well, it kills any chance of getting a few bob in. Like, if you look at how clubs make their money, there's a couple of bargains in through the gate. There'll be money on a pre-match lunch. There'd be money in the bar after the game. And all of that has long since gone, and the prospect of getting that back obviously is now knocked on the head, and I don't think anybody's surprised. And I pick up on what Collie said about the hope that rugby isn't gone, period. I think anybody at this stage would be happy to get rugby in some form back, if it's friendlies against local clubs or whoever it is. The prospect of getting people back into a club playing the game, I think, would be paramount. Never mind whether it's a competitive game or not. Just getting people back in, because the damage that has been done has been across the board. It's been absolutely massive, and I would really fear for how we're going to pick up the pieces on this, particularly in those transition years. And I'd be interested to hear what Duncan says, but his opinion on the situation in Cons. But I know from 20s, from my experience of 20s in Clontarf over the last five seasons, it's a really great year for lads to be playing rugby. The lucky ones have 2 years coming out of school. Some lads have only 1 year. And that, you know, that we pulled up stumps last Feb, March. In fact, we were due to play UCC in an All-Ireland quarter-final. That's where that stopped. So there are lads now who just missed out on that year completely. Mm-hmm. And to come straight out of school and bypass your transition year into a club, if you are new to that club, and even if you're not, it's your transition to the senior end of the club, is really tough. You know, it's like students now doing everything by Zoom. You know, they miss out on that college experience. That's hard to take.
Yeah, Duncan, you'd seen that firsthand. If you just look at the players you played with last year, the Shane Daly's, the Jack Crowley's, that development that you need, that 1 year, few years of AOL to be able to push on.
Yeah, look, I suppose in terms of that, there won't be any league games played in, I don't know how many months it will have been by the time, and as Brendan said there, you know, the drop off from fellas packing it in at the age of 21 after 20s, you know, not taking it so seriously. They're enjoying the college life or whatever. So I don't think we know exactly the impact it'll have on numbers dropping off in terms of participation. So that'll be an interesting one to keep an eye on. But yeah, look, I think for people like Jack, as you said, Shane Daly, I think playing in the AIL made a big difference for them. I think Jack probably only played 5 or 6 games, but Shane would have played a good few, 2 or 3 seasons, like most of us would have done when we were younger. And like, there was a theory or a view back in the day that if you weren't playing for your province, that there was no point going back playing in AIL. But in that situation, then you get finally get picked to play again for your province, but you haven't played a game for a week. So like, you know, the games are there and they are good for you. They keep you match ready, and there's no substitute for that. So I think, you know, maybe it lost the attraction it had when you first started out Dunners to when we were kind of playing, and then for a few years it died off. But I think, you know, it does serve a purpose, and the standard is quite good there, and people can benefit a lot from making themselves available and playing in those games.
Colin, Brendan did stress there just how important it is to get some sort of game, some sort of play back in clubs again. You mentioned that you're exploring all options. What kind of options are you exploring?
Yeah, it's the crystal ball a little bit, but we've only played about 4 or 5 rounds of the Energia series, so we haven't canned that yet. So there's still around 7 or 8 rounds of that to be completed, which allows both our male and female All Ireland League teams to play local. So what you're trying to do here is mitigate against the risk and ensure that paramount to us is the safety of our players and our members. And so it's very unfortunate that COVID is probably dictating everything that we can do, and public health is guiding us. And so whatever we can do, if we can extend the season, we'll look at extending the season. But we absolutely believe that we will produce a drop down menu for what players want to do. And there's certain players in the club will absolutely want to play a competitive fixtures. There's other players in the club and a large amount of other players in the club that just want to play social rugby, as Brendan said. And there's no reason why we can't go into various activities right throughout the summer months to allow choice and to provide, you know, opportunities for the clubs and to get the members back in maybe different ways than we did before. And I suppose that's what COVID has allowed us to do a little bit is, yes, there's a handbrake on, but like we're connecting with players, volunteers, clubs, referees, coaches in completely different ways than we've had done before, and we're getting massive, massive take-up on them numbers. So people are adapting and people are changing, and we also know that throughout all this COVID restrictions and putting protocols in place, the energy from our clubs and schools, we just got to applaud their endeavours throughout the pandemic so far. That I believe there is an energy there, and I believe that there will be a shoulder to wheel to get the shutters open and to provide outlets for our participants. And I'm very passionate about it, and I know the RFU are.
Colin, I have a personal example of that. Duncan went back and played. I went back and started coaching the under sevens. But just in con, there's been an increase to get us all up to speed, to make sure we're all on coaching courses, to make sure that when we do get back, we're able to give better sessions than we probably had before.
Absolutely, Dunica. The coaching webinars, the take-up has been really, really positive. We're in the middle of a level up for coaches and players watching rugby. The numbers are through the roof at the moment, Dunica, and it just shows that we are connecting in different ways. And to me, it's very, very encouraging, because it's evidence-based to suggest that there's a hunger for our participants to get back playing. And I think we just need to double our efforts that when we do get back, we provide that safe environment and we provide that reassurance, but we make the experience really, really positive.
Brendan, just from a financial point of view, I imagine that there isn't as much of a take-up in memberships across all levels, from grassroots right up to seniors, and even just things like fundraisers. things that were done every year to generate money to keep the club going, that's they're not able to happen now. Well, not the ones, the scale of the ones that might have happened in the past. How are clubs coping from a financial point of view?
With great difficulty, and it didn't help that the IRFU, straight off the bat, Collie says the IRFU are very passionate about this. The degree of their passion, I think, was illustrated by the pathetic amount of money that they offered the clubs straight off the bat, which is $3,000. Most clubs just didn't bother their backsides applying for it because they had to jump through hoops in order to get it. And I thought, from a PR point of view, apart from anything else, that was a really bad, bad mistake that the union made. That said, you ask about fundraisers. It's very hard to raise funds, Marie, if your gates are closed. So I'll give an example. In Clontarf with the 20s, season before last, we raised the cuts of $10,000 for Bieta House through endeavours that the lads, I won't call them kids because they're not kids anymore, but that they had done, ending with a massive touch rugby tournament in the club. And it was an absolutely fantastic social event, and it was incredible for the amount of money that they raised for Bieta. And they had plans then to move that on. Last season was going to be for the Kevin Bell Repatriation Trust. That, you know, that had to be knocked on the head because facilities were closed. So if you can't run an event in your club, it's not that easy to make money. As Collie said, people are working very hard on finding alternative ways of surviving and staying in touch and being useful, which is great. But the reality is, if your gates are closed, and they are, it's very difficult to run a fundraiser.
And Collie, just I understand that, you know, you're going to be as positive as you possibly can there, but would you just like to respond to Brendan's point there that the offering to clubs just wasn't enough?
Absolutely, Brendan. I think you're a little bit disrespectful because on one side, you're absolutely right. We were the first union really to come out of the blocks. And when you look at the overall financial situation of the IRFU, I think we then supported it with PPE equipment. And I know it was limited, but it was a really good gesture. And then moreover than that, we included our submission to government and Sport Ireland, which we allocated $4 million to our clubs, which is the most in that I've been in the union for 15 to 20 years. I don't remember that sort of funding. And I know being allocated to the clubs, and I know I absolutely hear where the clubs are at, and that's why the allocation was so large as well. And I think we all want to get through this. But I just find it's very disrespectful at times just to make comments like that.
Brendan?
Well, the comment is valid, and I was overwhelmed by the anger from people from lots of clubs around the country whom I spoke to at the time, and who pointed out that as a percentage of the IRFU's overall spend, the club goes down year on year. And people are tired of listening to the IRFU saying, oh, the club is the bedrock of the game, it's fundamental. If it's the bedrock of the game and it's fundamental, then when times are good, you need to up your investment. And when times are good, as a percentage of overall spend, the IRFU did not up their investment. And people in clubs are tired of being told this. Now, you know, we are in a unique situation. I'm not suggesting that the IRFU should have been pulling money off trees and throwing it at clubs. But the point I made initially was absolutely 100% valid. The reaction of the IRFU with the initial payment was pathetic.
Okay, well, I'm going to move things on just a little bit, yeah. Collie, because, you know, there is a lot to get through, yeah. And the finances are just one part of what is happening with COVID. And the other part as well, I think, that we really need to get to is just the social impact. And, you know, Duncan, from a player point of view, you know, you mentioned not having that weekly interaction, that, you know, a couple of days a week training with your teammates. Do you think that people are going to step away, that, you know, there's going to be a big impact really just on participation, on numbers, and not just at your level, even just, you know, down through the ranks with kids being away from the clubs, with all the different underage levels?
Yeah, I think there will be. I think, you know, kids, like the younger kids, are hard to keep interested at the best of times, and if something like this has come along and they haven't been training or involved in it for a couple of months, you know, they kind of forget about it, move on to the next. I think senior rugby the participation level might be okay, but as I said, I think it's more the bracket of fellas who are finishing that under 20, 21 stint that are still in college enjoying that kind of lifestyle, and you know, they're not taken so seriously that they tend to drop off. And so I think it'll be telling in the next, when things start up again, what the levels will be like.
Duncan, just on the point we were chatting about earlier on about, you know, maybe playing against teams from around our area, we started that way. I remember there was games against Hugh Munsters. How did that go down? Because I remember the old Munster Senior League was, you know, it was a massive thing to win, a bit like a Munster Senior Cup, a really prized possession within the clubs.
Look, I think again, people are at different stages of their career, so they value it, whereas I think other fellas then would be just interested in playing an AIL. I think from my own point of view, the season that was cancelled, we were undefeated all year, so I was disgusted when that was cancelled in March. So I think the AIL has a certain gloss about it. It's a good competition, whereas obviously the league we played at the start of the season, we were playing teams from different divisions, and you know, it's good to develop younger players, but as I said, it's kind of situational based on the experience of certain players. So for me, I was hoping to get back playing AIL this year. That Energy League, the one we played at the start of the season, was good for what it was there for, but as I said, it was no substitute in the long run for an AIL or anything.
Colleague, the development pathway is different now, you know, and you've been involved in all strands of it. Just the importance, not only of the club, but for, you know, young players that are involved in the game, how to keep going and stay involved at the moment.
Yeah, Donica, it's critical for our young players, our age grade players, our club and school players. And as Brendan correctly stated, they haven't played in a year. And during the summer, when we were in pre-season, other sports were obviously playing competitions, and then when we got back, we're into lockdown. So, you know, it's watching rugby, it's individual training, it's developing your own understanding as a player through watching. And in fairness, what we found is a lot of our coaches are very inventive and creative during this time. There's a lot of webinars, there's a lot of conversations and educational pieces going on, and as much as we're restricted, I think both ourselves and more importantly clubs and schools are absolutely really, really creative in that engagement piece, be it former players coming on and speaking with various teams and classes, be it S&C updates or nutritional advice and various other webinars, and I know there's only so much you can connect, and that has to be timely, but it all the time keeps us connected, and I suppose the Six Nations is around the corner as well, and that's a big opportunity for players just to look and to learn and to watch and to be curious about the game.
Brendan, on Duncan's point as well, it's also an opportunity for the kind of communities to come together, isn't it? You know, it's a talking point, it's something to probably, you know, it's not ideal, but a Zoom chat or whatever it's going, for the clubs to keep in contact.
I think clubs have been pretty good, not just in rugby, but across the board, and GA especially as well. And I know a buddy of mine to be involved in Neighbour Ogue, and I know they've done a lot of local work, and other clubs around the locality have as well. And even if your door is closed, I think one thing that is vital is staying in touch with each other in the club, whether they are playing members, or all clubs have a fair proportion of old geezers who rock up at the weekend and have a few pints and maybe go to games and are involved in all little kind of subsets in the club, whether it could be a cycling club within the club or walking or whatever. It's just so important to stay in touch with these people. And, you know, if you were trying to organise a few Bob Dunica, you would probably ring five or six of your mates and say, can you get so-and-so? You divvy it up and you break it up. And I think that's what clubs are doing, and clubs need to do, is to take responsibility for staying in touch with people so that they don't fall off the edge.
Absolutely. Lads, I think it's a valid point to wrap it all up. We're keeping in touch and looking out for our club. Brendan Cully and Duncan Williams, thanks very much for joining us on Game On.
Game On 2FM with Green Farm. Fuel your day the healthy way with Green Farm. on-the-go chicken bites. 100% natural and packed with protein.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back. It is half-time in the early kickoffs, and Peter Smith is at Turf Moor for us. Peter.
2-0 City, slick, neat and efficient football throughout. They went ahead and signed at 3 minutes as Burnley keeper Pope could only push Silva's shot into the path of Jesus, who scored with a header, and City ripped Burnley apart for the second with another precise move. Gundogan driving the ball in from the right into the six-yard area with Sterling tapping in from short range. City lead 2-0.
Thanks, Peter. It is 2-0 to Leicester City against Fulham as well. Now, 2020 didn't give us a lot of sport, but it gave us a lot of Saoirse Noonan as she starred for both Cork City and the Cork Ladies Footballers, and she joins us now on the line. Saoirse, thanks for joining us. You had a really good year, I think, all things considered. You got to play quite a lot of sport, and we got to see quite a lot of you as well.
Hi, Marie. Thanks for having me. Yeah, look, I think we were lucky that we got to get a chance to get on the pitch last year, and I was lucky, I suppose. I had two sports to play in, so I enjoyed every moment of it, and it was a different year, but it was definitely an exciting one for me.
Yeah, well, you definitely seem to make it count anyway. You did quite a lot of juggling. You must have been really organised.
Yeah, I suppose at the start of the year, we had loads of time to prepare ourselves, loads of free time, a bit of downtime that I usually wouldn't have. So I think then when it started getting into the tough stuff come the end of the year, I was prepared and I knew that's what I wanted to do. So I think when you want to do something enough and you put your mind to it, then it makes it a lot easier.
It's a brilliant mind frame to have, Saoirse. But how do you prepare in terms of training loads? Because I'd say the demands from both sports are quite high.
Yeah, I suppose I have a great support network behind me, both teams, my family. I think there was a joke there made about my mom probably having the bat ready for me and stuff throughout the year. But yeah, look, everyone definitely supports me, and I think I just switch fairly fast from one to another, and I've been doing it long enough now, so I suppose I'm used to it nearly.
So over the last few weeks, Saoirse, it has been reported that you are weighing up options outside of Ireland, and I don't mean from a Gaelic football point of view. Just what are your plans for the season ahead, the year ahead, really?
Yeah, I suppose a few teams have been in contact. There's a few options abroad and stuff, and I've definitely been kind of looking into them. I'm very happy here at the moment. I've had a good few years now playing with Cork City and playing with the GAA. It's early days for sure. We're not back in training yet with anyone. We don't know what's going to happen with coronavirus around the world. So, to be honest, I'm just looking after myself. I'm enjoying my time training with, I suppose, my family. We go out 2-3 times a week and train together, so that's quite enjoyable. And it's stuff that I used to be able to do before. So yeah, it's going to be definitely an exciting year. With one that I don't know where to start with, I suppose, and I'm just taking it day by day at the moment.
Well, we will certainly look forward to following your every move as we did last year. Saoirse Noonan, thanks so much for joining us, and best of luck with whatever comes up in the next few months. Now, that is all we have time for. We'll be back tomorrow, Donica. A very busy show. You're on a day off. We'll have Tyrone's Conor McKenna. Ruby will be on as well to look ahead to the Dublin Racing Festival, and we'll also hear from Patrick Horgan.
Range available in selected Tesco, Super Value, and convenience stores nationwide.